demonstrations and tables and meet all the cooperators. It's taking place in the parking lot adjacent to Harvest Co-op in Central Square from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. tomorrow. Check that out. 4th of July, what would you do for the 4th of July? You're going to grill some meat? Well, don't do it alone. The 7th Annual Anti-Imperialist Picnic this Monday, July 4th, from noon to 4 p.m. at Charles River Park in Alston. Build world peace, celebrate independence for all nations. Meet some local radicals and their kids and their dogs. Eat lots of great food, including a vegan-friendly grill, although you may eat meat if you so choose. Sunbathe, blow bubbles, play games, sing old labor songs, bring your musical instrument, and enjoy a musical performance by the wonderful Sergio Reyes. Look for the banners, no stars and stripes, please. You can RSVP at www.spmassachusetts.org, that would stand for Socialist Party, Massachusetts.org, or just show up. But if you RSVP, let them know if you can volunteer or bring something. If you bring food, please label it vegan, vegetarian, or meat, as well as any common allergens. This event is sponsored by the Industrial Workers of the World, Boston May Day Coalition, Mass Global Action, and Socialist Party of Boston. It is Monday, July 4th, from noon to 4 at the Charles River Park, located off Soldiers Field Road in Alston. You can take the number 86 bus, which goes through Somerville and Cambridge towards Alston to the Everett Street stop. Look for the parking and picnic tables by the water. And one more thing, the Pastors for Peace caravan to Cuba will be visiting the Friends meeting in Harvard Square this Wednesday evening, July the 6th. By traveling to Cuba with humanitarian aid without a U.S. government license, Pastors for Peace challenges the U.S. economic blockade against Cuba, as well as the blockade on the minds of the Americans, about the achievements of the Cuban people. That's Wednesday, July 6th at Friends Meeting, 5 Longfellow Park, Cambridge. Dinner from 6 to 7 p.m., program from 7 to 9 p.m., featuring music, dancing, and discussion, and sponsored by many excellent groups. For more information, visit july26.org. Lots more going on, but I believe that I'm all out of time, and there are humans coming. This has been a program called What's Left. I have been Linda, and I will be again next week. But until then, I'd like you to know that the views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants, and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And have a safe and happy holiday weekend, and we'll do this again next week. Peace. You're listening to WMBR Cambridge. It is 7 p.m.
مرحبا في ميوزك فور هيومن. I am الدكتور جالس السكران, which in some ancient language means the squealing whale, probably. Listen to the whale. I'd like to take the moment for quiet relaxation to turn off the cell phone and to prepare to meditate. If the lights are on dimmers, it might be the right time to dim the lights. To say about the music. Marhaban, Aurora.
Thank you for having me on the show again today. It is a lovely exercise in meditation to embrace music which you have never before tasted, as we are now, allowing ourselves to be thrust into an unknown future. We must concentrate and allow the unknown to embrace us, no matter what the future holds.
It's difficult to do this. Sometimes visions torment us. I have recently myself been tormented by another vision. But first, let us be tormented by Zoro. Zoro, marhaban.
Thank you, Doctor. It is good to be on the show today, and I'm very, very sorry to hear that you are tormented.
Yeah, the torment is from everywhere. I sometimes feel the universe, if you permit yourself, will torment the crap out of you. We'd also like to welcome Sanjay. Sanjay, who may or may not greet us.
I believe that Sanjay is speaking in the language of the body, of which I am not very good at interpreting, to be honest.
Well, I think Sanjay has issued a greeting and waved his arms.
Let us move away from torment. I believe today is a day for mellow relaxation, for diving into the great, fizzy deeps of sublime pleasure and understanding.
Well, Aurora, let me tell you about the vision.
Please.
And then you can tell me, you know, and torment, I think it's all has to do with how one interprets the messages that the universe has given you, or me, or us.
I think us, or we.
In this case, me. So in the evening, I awoke having the following vision in my memory. I had the vision that I, bearing no biological child, had chosen to adopt a son. The son was small, a boy. It was strange because I clearly am far too busy to actually have a child now. But nevertheless, I took on an adopted intellectual offspring. Naturally, I really am too busy for a child. And so I came home periodically and find the child is growing very independent. I'm almost neglecting the child. It is to that extent. I come home and I find the child is growing, surviving, perhaps not flourishing, but doing well. And as the dream progressed, I found that the child was a girl, a small girl, that she, my son had grown into a female, and that she, in spite of my neglect, respected me, and there was the relationship between a father and a daughter there. And this is the end of the vision.
And was this vision a sleeping or waking vision?
This was a sleeping vision. As I said, I awoke from sleeping with this memory in my brain.
And in the vision, which one of you was asleep?
Well, in the vision, neither of us. We were not sleeping.
I'm sorry, I must have misunderstood.
It's very simple. I was sleeping in reality, and then I woke up with the vision in my memory.
I think I'm clear.
And as many of our listeners may or may not be aware, sleeping visions must be dealt with much more metaphorical imagery and understanding. Waking visions tend to be much more straightforward or much more abstract, or both at the same time. And here there is some symbolism in the child being a son, some personal symbolism which perhaps you can explain, Doctor. And upon neglect being absolved with this change into a woman. Now, if you were to raise an intellectual female rather than a male, what differences do you believe you'd raise?
I'm not sure that there are any differences to me, really. So I'm not sure it is a personal difference.
That is interesting. I'm wondering if in your life you ever considered to raise a child, and if you had thought about which child you would like to raise.
Yeah, not really. Again, I think there is some truth to the vision. The idea of biological offspring, I think, obsolete.
And I believe you do have many biological offspring, as you have mentioned, yes?
Oh, no, absolutely, but they are almost meaningless to me. The intellectual offspring is the modern medium for evolution. Yeah. But the vision has, as I say, tormented me this whole day.
So I'm not sure if there is something uncomfortable about the change of gender of your child, or specifically how it is so tormenting.
I think particularly because the vision was so specific, not particularly disturbing, other than the thought of having a child, really a baby, that I neglected. It makes me wonder if there are things in my life that I am neglecting.
And was this a transmutation into female form, or do you believe that the child was always female?
I think it was always female.
I see.
I simply misinterpreted the gender.
So it was a sign of the depth, the great depth of your neglect, that you did not even understand the gender.
Truly, this was not the part that disturbed me.
It was the intellectual lack of...
The lack of guidance that,
yes,
I gave the child. The lack of nurture and attention.
It is interesting because I believe personally that the evolution of creatures on this planet is not guided, is not intellectually or physically touched by the Mother Earth, but that it was set into motion and allowed to flourish how it will. And perhaps this is the best way. To allow the chaos to erupt in new and strange forms.
Yes, this notion of chaos, it's interesting. I'm not sure, perhaps in the vision, Doctor, you are uncomfortable because, in a sense, you have a lack of control in your lack of understanding.
I believe it's very clear that the whole point of the adaptation is to spread the intellectual genetics, if you will.
Yes, the adoption was for this purpose.
Now, why do you believe that this is such an important way to touch one another with our minds rather than with our... with our minds, yes?
Well, it is a theory that I would like to... I would like to propose, which is that as a medium for evolution, that our bodies have stopped evolving, or that the evolution in our physical, in our biological sense has been superseded by the ability to cause changes to be spread by the use of language.
I think I understand this intellectual course you are trying to aim at, which is to say that although we do not appear to be physically different very much from our parents, there is a transaction between people of the ideas, and a question of which ideas will flourish in our society.
Now, I really am interested by this theory because it really does resonate with a practice that I've held for a long time without being able to understand why I felt that it was so beneficial. But to go to the extreme of your statement, Doctor, that in the eventuality, as we use our minds and our language more and more, and our bodies less and less, we allow ourselves to deteriorate and eventually become large heads, perhaps in a jar or hooked up to electrodes.
Well, I certainly did not intend to imply...
Of course.
...that the biological functions would cease, simply that the principal components of evolution were now focused largely within the rapid changes transmitted through the medium of language. Language meaning spoken language, written language, and also verbal language or videographic language, musical language, artistic language, all.
I think I understand it's to say that the ripples of life are carrying themselves on a new medium.
Beautifully put. But my point is, if you take the extension of your thought, that those who are sickly and weak, those who have strange difficulties with muscles or lungs or such, are allowed now to flourish with their bright minds, allowed to carry on their physical children. And so the population in general does become somewhat weaker.
I see that we are living in a society where at an earlier stage in our evolution, in our progress, strength, raw physical strength was required for survival. So on average, we were stronger. But now it is less necessary and there are more demands are put mentally on us. We become, on average, smarter, responding to the pressure.
Which is why I believe it is vital for each and every human being to train in order to wrestle a lion.
so that we do not become heads in a jar, unless you wish to become a head in a jar, which I believe is an amiable goal.
I'm not sure that we need to work specifically against the head jar scenario, but I realize the massive concern. Sanjay, I'd like to get some gestures from you on this subject.
He is motioning as if to unscrew a bottle.
Indicating that the...
the head jar is perhaps opened, yes?
I think the indication there is, Aurora, if I may interpret, that like a genie, the lamp, once opened, cannot be closed. So, similarly, the use of language for evolution has caused an irreversible change, off into the distance like a giant salami, I think. Like a rainbow.
Yes, and this is, of course, with additional gesturing. And now Sanjay appears to be eating a sandwich.
I think it is a gesture of eating, because I'm not seeing the sandwich itself. So it's a form of communication, not simply the act of eating.
Well, we all have to leave this to some extent to Sanjay. I realize now that it is very strange. Like the appendix, why have we given a microphone to Sanjay?
So that his gestures may be heard. There are vibrations beyond the mere audible.
Indeed. Like the jellyfish.
Yes, the noble jellyfish.
Seems to be what Sanjay is indicating. If you would like to gesture at us audibly, the number is 617-253-8810. Or it is optional to simply speak, unlike Sanjay. But where does this leave us? In a non-vision earlier, I had a phone call with one of my spiritual leaders from early in my study. Perhaps now gradually becoming a spiritual colleague. Was interesting. Made me think very much of this year and how many accomplishments I've enjoyed this year, because this is now just reaching the end of my golden year. What is termed the golden year. So I was, of course, born on, I will not say which day of the year, but I was born on, let us say, nth day, where January 1st would be day 1. I was born on day N, and this year I am N years old, making this my golden year. And my last golden year.
And has it been golden for you?
Yes. I think that at the beginning of the year there were certain accomplishments I would have liked to have achieved. Certain levels of transcendence, which I did not quite reach. But in conference with my spiritual leader today, I saw that it may be possible to actually achieve these levels before the end of my golden year. And even if not, I should be able to accept the other spiritual accomplishments I have enjoyed as making for a very, very, very singularly successful year.
I'd like to make an observation, actually, on this point. That we are creatures of change. That we cannot see the present. We cannot see this instant of time in absoluteness. That we can only feel relatively. And so perhaps the ultimate golden year is one that begins in failure and disappointment, only to reach a crescendo of accomplishment and joy.
That's an interesting suggestion, but I think that a true sense of harmony with the universe comes not from struggle and strife and saying that things start bad and they get better, but from a sense of constancy, a sense of equilibrium with the environment.
Ah, but the environment is something that evolves constantly. And so an equilibrium is never possible unless it is one in which you allow yourself to evolve with the environment. It is a common misconception that achieving nirvana is to achieve a constant sense of eternal happiness, when in reality, nirvana is an acceptance. An acceptance of the failures of life, an acceptance of the ways of sadness, an understanding that our tiny, trivial problems are nothing in the grand scale of the universe, and so they should not trouble us too much.
Some say C sharp. C sharp, I've heard people call the next answer the way. But sometimes I respond, perhaps this is D flat.
Exactly.
I'm not sure if I understand precisely the metaphor you are making, but it seems clear to me that an equilibrium may still have a dynamical quality.
Well, consider my point in another way. As a child, one of the most devastating events was if you were planning to have ice cream and the ice cream never happened. That, to a child, can be very devastating. But as you age, your problems grow larger, and the tiny, trivial problems which you had before do not hurt you nearly as much.
Yes, but
and so
I
you are able to go through the days with more constancy, with less emotional fluctuation. And as you age, you become more and more mellow in acceptance that there are much grander problems, and the problems that you have are pretty okay.
I will agree with that.
I think it is an important skill to remain positive in light of these things, Aurora. I think it is a skill, really a skill, to it is a stage in life after birth to be positive because of ignorance, then later to become negative because of knowledge, and then later in life to be positive in spite of knowledge.
Sanjay is pointing to the on button, indicating, I believe, that it is a constant struggle, that you must always be on guard.
Always on.
Yes. Always.
On ball.
On everything.
On.
Just on.
I think that's deep, Sanjay.
It's a suggestion of constant vigilance, I think.
Sanjay, why the silence? Is it a vow? Vow of silence? Yeah, vow, he replies. Is it a day-long vow or simply for the hour? All day, he indicates. Longer than the day? No, just the day. How unfortunate for us, but perhaps next time. 61, 7, 1, 7, 1. Aurora, Zoro, any ideas here?
July the 1st.
July the 1st, today's date. I think 1-7 always. I'm so confused. 7-1.
I thought it perhaps would be a suggestion of the phone number.
The 7-1 number.
The
number
six.
Indeed contains a 617. Say a 17. Come on, Sanjay. 617-253-8810. Sanjay just takes pleasure in confusing me.
But please, if you are listening, call in. We would love to have you as a part of our conversation.
Now, Sanjay, what are you aiming to learn by this vow of silence?
What is it, a matter of learning?
I believe he says Om Nom.
Om Nom? Om Nom.
I think you are over-interpreting the consonants. I think it is the Buddhist Om.
Om Nom, clearly Om Nom, referring to the peace, Zoro, that one finds through consumption. Is that right, Sanjay? Of course.
And I believe it would be wonderful if all of us were to take a moment and Om Nom together.
Om Nom? Now, Aurora, I love this exercise because it reveals the wisdom in Sanjay's earlier statement, which is that truly no peace can be achieved through the Om Nom.
Yes.
Because the Nom interrupts, the consumption interrupts the peace, which is truly achieved through self-denial and emptiness.
This is beautiful, and I believe this is exactly, this makes perfect sense in this vow of silence, to deny oneself the pleasure of speaking, which, as we all know, Sanjay loves to speak.
But at the same time, in denying himself this pleasure, he is able to live an existence which has more smoothness, if you will. He is not interrupted by his speech.
Now here is a question, Aurora, Zoro, and Sanjay. Do people that cannot speak own telephones?
They own, apparently, according to Sanjay, they own joysticks or cell phones.
I think he's indicating the power of the telephone for texting.
Ah, yes, I see.
For sending messages, text messages. Now, Sanjay, since you seem to know a lot, it's only a recent development, the texting. So before this, no telephones. I see. And
I'm not sure.
They would send pictures.
Pigeons, carrier pigeons.
Pigeons, I understand.
That's interesting. I often wonder, I've not had the opportunity to use a carrier pigeon, but do the letters often get lost, or is it just as bad as the postal office?
So they often get lost, like the postal office.
I think it is actually much better than the postal office. They do often get lost.
Passenger pigeon has been extinct for almost one century.
Was it a specific variety of pigeon?
Well, I have a question, actually, to completely change the topic. But, you know, it occurs to me, this issue of adoption, that there is a natural end to the parent-child relationship, which is, Sanjay indicates that it extends forever, ending with death only. But many know, beyond death even. Sanjay, it seems to me, however, that many relationships do end with both participants living and can be even regarded as successful in spite of the end of the relationship. Some relationships are designed to end. The parent-child relationship, as Sanjay indicates, is one that is not supposed to end, but a business relationship should end. Aurora?
I believe this can be explained or motivated through a metaphor.
Yeah.
The noble tree. If you were to urinate daily on a noble tree in order to nourish it, you have left a mark on the tree. Even if you leave the tree, after a couple of years, that mark of your urination is there forever. Each relationship leaves a lasting mark. Ah, but the tree shall never leave the ground in which it is rooted.
Mm. But it seems to me that a romantic relationship is one that is expected to last as long, even though it is not starting from birth. Is this appropriate? Perhaps also the romantic relationship should be able to end just as it began. The beginning and the end.
Have you ever used a pottery wheel?
Mm-hmm.
And you know that when you are wetting the clay, when you are molding it, you cannot force it. You cannot push it. You must feel the clay. You must allow it to be molded in your fingers, but only as it wells. If you push it too far, everything collapses in upon itself. It is the same with relationships. You may go in knowing what you expect to get out, but you must allow the clay of the relationship to be molded as slowly and as carefully as it wishes to be molded, and to fall apart if that is what happens.
I like this metaphor particularly because it well explains the spinning sensation which I feel in many of these situations.
Sanjay is gesturing wildly to me. I believe he is saying that if the agent of evolution is thought and speech, then I believe he's indicating a baby. The child will take that forward. But romantic relationships end in death or divorce. I believe I'm understanding this body language a little better.
I'm not understanding the idea that a romantic relationship, divorce, is seen as a negative thing.
Perhaps it isn't.
Isn't it? Is it not?
Well,
a successful relationship, then, as Sanjay would say, a romantic one, would end in death. That is the one we regard as successful.
See, I think it's interesting. The notion is, if I may put some words in Sanjay's mouth, is to say that the romantic relationship does not carry forward a new piece of itself into the world and propagate in this evolutionary sense. But I think that I disagree, which is to say that a person may have many romantic encounters in their life and they may change him or her.
But these are seen as gross, seen, I think, as uncouth to have several romantic relationships. The ideal is to have a single one and to have faithfulness.
And why is that an ideal?
This, I'm not giving a why. I'm not even giving a value, simply stating what is there. When I hear about the divorce statistics in the United States, it is a negative thing. There is so much divorce, and it is seen negatively.
It is very interesting when you point that out, and I believe I see what you're saying, that the successful, or the so-called successful relationship... I'm sorry, let me arrange my thoughts. The so-called unsuccessful relationships are the ones that end in the death of the relationships, while the successful ones end in the death of the relationship and of one of the parties.
That is an interesting implication. Is there the romance will die or you will die? It's very frightening, I think.
Is there no life after the relationship?
After the death of one of the parties?
I think there is a song which has some meditations on this concept. Do you believe in life after love? Very powerful words.
Mm-hmm. no sense to me, for I believe in life with love. And I believe that life contains love.
So you are saying that it is a contradiction of some kind because life and love are two aspects of one object?
How can you be alive if you do not love the life that you are living? Or if you do not love the fact that you are alive? If you do not, then I believe that is it for you.
I'm not so certain. I think that such a statement may be made easily with the mouth, with the tongue. It is simple to say that, but you may just as well insert any other emotion into this web of words, and it will make as much sense.
Sanjay is shaking his head.
I think requesting a chant to be performed. I really enjoyed the Om Nom chant, but I would like it if we tried another syllable, a single syllable.
Acha?
Acha is two syllables.
Cha.
Cha, excellent.
Shall we?
Please. Cha.
Cha, 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 cha.
These idiots do not know how to meditate.
I believe meditation contains the joy in which one tries to impart in...
See, I'm sorry, I should not call you idiots. Of course, your meditation is your way. But see, this is the result of the torment that I've experienced from the day.
And I believe it has been a couple of weeks that you have felt tormented.
Really?
I'm curious, if you may answer, when did you have this vision which has been possessing you?
Well, it's not only the vision, Zoro. The vision that I described earlier was last night, but it is an attitude that I have been developing which is frustrating to me. An attitude that the universe owes me.
Now, attitudes are like coats. It may weigh heavy on your shoulders, but once you make the decision to take it off, the rest comes naturally.
I also think that it is good to check your attitude at the door at certain locations.
We all carry an elixir within ourselves to cure these attitudes.
That's a very powerful language.
A spiritual elixir. It is difficult to drink because it is bitter. To admit that it is acceptable.
And yet the aftertaste is so sweet. Today.
Where did you find yourself?
I found myself looking through the eyes of those around me at myself. A strange form of introspection. And it was disturbing, disquieting.
To see within from without.
Precisely. Whereas before I've always seeing without from within, accessing, as you will, the universe from the depths of my own soul.
You see the mystery of the man who spends his life chasing the world, and the child who runs away and the world chases him. Some symmetry there that I still do not understand. Sanjay. I think Sanjay is indicating with his elbows that eternal life comes through this symmetry. It's really weird.
He gestures a great circle with a hand pushing through.
Pushing the sun. The sun, and then harvesting the sun.
As if penetrating through the here and now into a greater, more beautiful region.
Doesn't make sense. Let's all close our eyes and shut Sanjay out briefly.
It has been done for some time for me.
I can still hear the droop of his shoulders.
Yes, he's a fan of the shrug and the sigh without any noise. I am sensing, I think, a bit of exasperation. The day is growing long for his vow.
Let's take a moment, all of us. Let's put the microphone on our stomachs and otherwise close our eyes and be silent. Why don't we bring in our first caller now? Again, for anyone that'd like to join, 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hey, have any of you there, either for humans, had any contact with any ghosts lately?
Any ghosts?
Or maybe aliens with laser beams that can reverberate the sound?
Well, I personally have not been a ghost for very long, but it was an enlightening experience. It has been some time since I was with him, though.
Now, I must say that in my personal belief, a lot of what people refer to as ghosts are spiritual disturbances in the metaphysical ether. That we are sensing the beautiful fluctuations of the universe and interpreting them in the only way that we know. Perhaps we are hearing the souls of the dead. Perhaps we are hearing the first hoofbeats of the universe as it grew past us.
Caller, why the request on ghosts or aliens?
I tried to get Tony's dog dusted.
Is dog dusting a verb, or is it mean really?
Well, it doesn't work. It doesn't work, so we just go with it.
I'm not sure. Dog dusting.
I'm going to dust your dog.
Dusting the dog. I'm not sure. So can you elaborate on this?
Well, apple juice comes in wooden cartons that we eat.
You eat the apple juice.
He eats the cartons, I believe.
Of course, of course. Why, caller, why? For the fiber.
Well, you see, there's this one thing, and they got it, didn't it? And, you know...
Hmm. Now, Color, I love these series of sounds that you are making. And I wish to hear more. Please do go on. Now, when you refer to dusting a dog, do you mean removing the dust or to add dust upon the dog?
You see, me and my friends are really spiritual. Mm. And some of these other people that come around here flexing their wax and shuffling their guts, you know, it just doesn't work and it leads to a lot of problems. Mm. And you want to think that you're a part of the mental expansion, then you can really curse your dreams and have fun with your little kitties, if you know what I mean.
Well, Galler, I do not mean to be presumptuous on any part, but if I had some advice, I think it would be to avoid problems.
Yeah, you know, because Cal has money to press records. So what we're really trying to say is that Calvin Johnson is a real cool guy.
I'm completely lost, Caller. I'm lost by the earlier statement.
The Caller, but listen, the Caller is merely following the path of his words through a mental map in his mind.
Uh-huh.
And it is so beautiful to hear this association.
Simply as like a word improvisation exercise.
Yes, but mapping his own experiences.
Smart.
You know what? I really just want to thank you guys. And I just want to say that no matter how many little nicks and ticks are in my voice right now, it will never disrupt the flow of the... There's something that a car is creating, and it's shaking my walls. Thanks, guys. Have a good night.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Caller. I you know, I love that word, jazz. So perplexing. If anyone else would like to join, we have very, very little time remaining, so we could say hi or listen to a gesture. 617-253-8810.
And perhaps in the meantime, we should each take the opportunity to word jazz for about 5 seconds.
Shall I start?
Please.
Keeny weeny, sausage meeny. Give me a sandwich, a chicken wing, ring-a-ding-ding. Zorro.
The reconstruction of events will take place at 5 p.m., but do not go to the cafeteria. It is haunted.
Aurora.
Starlight dripping fearlessly down the eyelids of the expansive universe. Gleaming, glistening journey.
Hear Sanjay's word jazz.
Face gesture, face gesture, face gesture, head swoop.
Thank you for the interpretation.
Beautiful dreamer.
Squeeve.
Hold. Hold arm rub.
Bull.
Well, that is enlightening and at the same time exasperating.
Not sure. Aurora, what are your interpretations?
Believe that Sanjay is experiencing a great mellowness of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Gesturing the beauty of life, of universe. And face transplantation.
Aurora, you know, you are, of course, an informal expert in language.
Yes, but in spoken language, I believe that I am not terribly good at interpreting physical gestures.
My difficulty here is that, as a non-native English speaker, I am occasionally perplexed. Earlier today, a man said the following statement to me, "Sir, please remove yourself from the premises."
Mm.
I asked him if I could remove myself from a single premise.
Mm-hmm.
This was very perplexing to all of us. The man said, "What are you doing here on the premise?" I said, "Sir, I am collecting an alm. I wish to buy a grocery."
This is interesting because I think that it is a great exercise in philosophy to remove ourselves from each premise one at a time that we may hold.
And may I say that I love that you are exploring the rules of the language and playing with it, which is something that a native speaker has no appreciation for.
Well, unfortunately, we have run out of time, and thank you for bringing me back to center. Sanjay, thank you for being with us. Aurora, ma'asalama.
Namaste.
Zoro.
Thank you, Doctor, and thank you, of course, to all the listeners out there as well.
I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran, here on Music for Human, which is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. We are here every Friday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for what's next here on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. Ma'asalama.
For safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.